This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Everybody has a social battery. Sometimes it's bursting with energy. Sometimes it's drained. What's the right amount of socializing for you? It can be really easy to spread yourself thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to improve your communication skills, learn to resolve conflict, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Ramdas today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ramdas.
After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome back to Ramdas Here and Now. I'm Raghu Marcus, and today I have a talk that Ramdas gave, interestingly enough, in 1996 in August, which was not long before he had that very devastating stroke, which of course he's come out of incredibly. To continue teaching over many years since then, 15, 16 years, something like that. And as you all know, he's doing just fine, living on Maui and doing retreats and continuing to teach. But this lecture was, it's called Invite Not the Future. And again, it's something that's come out of our media library, which we've been digitizing, working on diligently digitizing all of this 45 years of media, audio and video. And I just happened to find this. I thought, well, that's an interesting thing. Invite Not the Future. I had no idea what he was talking about. And what he is talking about is around anticipating future suffering and how you can turn that into something that enriches the present moment. And, you know, for many of us who are listening, not me, because I'm already anticipating a shorter span of life left, so, but for many of us who are listening, you know, this isn't something that is too present in our lives. I mean, you know, if you're 20, 30, 40, even just going on 50, isn't that something you're going to be thinking about? But that's why I love this talk, because it really gives suggestions as to why it might be important to really encounter the potential which most of us will go through, illness, old age. Suffering is endemic to our existence on Earth. So it's a great talk. But before I get into it, and before I forget, because we really appreciate everybody who supports what we're doing here through ramdas.org and Love, Serve, Remember Foundation, I do want to let everybody know that there's a great... we're having a retreat coming up in April in... in Maui with Ram Dass and Sharon Salzberg and Jai Utal. And we're going to stream from there these talks and Dharma talks and so on. And you can go up to ramdass.org and take a look at how you can join and take part. And that date will be 11, 12, and 13th of April. And it's free. Of course, you know, we always ask everybody to support us being able to continue to do this so that more people can share, which is what Ram Dass has been all about all these years. At the same time, just to promote a couple of other things, the new Cultivating movie was put out about 10 days ago, Cultivating Intuitive Faith and True Surrender, and it features Ram Dass and Sharon and Krishna Dass, and I tell a little story in there myself, but the star of the show is K.K. Shah, Ram Dass's the first translator, Indian brother, K.K. Shah, when he first met Maharaji, and he really starts a great dialogue about what, especially around what surrender really is. So that's a great thing. Go to ramdass.org and you can navigate over to that. And that's also streams for free. And don't forget Grist for the Mill, which just got re-released a couple of weeks ago. Well, that's probably a month ago now. And a great book with a wonderful new shot of Ram Dass. Well, it's an old shot of Ram Dass in a new jacket design. I think you'll like it. And then, continuing, all of these offerings is still here. A book Ram Dass put out about aging, which is, so this directly connects with Invite Not the Future, this talk. But it's now available as an ebook. So those of you who don't want to have a lot of physical objects lying around and just want it all on your Kindle or iBook iPad and go to the iBook store or to Kindle and pick it up. So now to this talk. Let me just say that I... again, as I mentioned before, I remember not thinking much about anything like this until very recently, as my parents started to age, and last year they both passed, and I had to, and over the last number of years, you know, they were going through old age and sickness, and it wasn't too bad compared to, you know, many, many stories that you might hear. My parents had relatively easy passings, and declining years weren't that bad. But this all certainly put it all square in front of me. And I think I did a podcast after my father left and talked about, because Ram Dass had mentioned in one of his talks about how being with dying people is being on the edge of awakening, and I had that experience with my father. So all of this did come up, but I truly do remember not paying a lot of attention, you know, for a long time. And as I look back and as I hear him talk here, I see that the valuable lessons of contemplating this stuff, even when you're pretty far away from. Well, we're all any moment away from anything because we have no idea. But here's something. He says, for those of us that are going to want to approach future suffering with some degree of equanimity and some degree of mindfulness and some degree of open-heartedness, the earlier we start, the better. And the more we come into the presence of these phenomena, so that we can work with them, even though they are not ours yet. The more we will have eaten what we have to eat and digested our reactivity to it and be able to keep our heart open. The more we will have eaten what we have to eat and digested our reactivity to it. So true. The more we'll be able to keep our heart open. And one of the, you know, valuable comparisons he uses here, and it is psychedelics and altered states. And I think all of us who have done psychedelics, particularly either psilocybin or LSD, where you experience a death of sorts, depending on how potent it is, and hopefully you have a, you know, we suggest, as Ram Dass and Leary did a long time ago, that this is done in with a guide and in a quiet place and so on, and done for spiritual reasons. You do experience what it is that you would experience as you pass, and in the, you know, as you would die. There is, you know, it's not so much the body dying, it's the psychological death. So Ram Dass says, I value these altered states of consciousness so much, and I value that fact that I believe the mystery of death is a non-conceptual moment, and that dying is like a maha, big acid trip. It's a trip in which the structures start to break down and break down, and you are more here than you ever were, because the boundaries between you and others are dissolving, and you are the other, but you are holding on to a model of yourself as a time-space entity. How true is that? And that is exactly what you deal with when you guide someone through an acid trip. The breaking down of your consciousness, the thing that is frightening, is the psychological death, like I just said. So the more you practice, the more you are comfortable with that process of transformation. So yeah, it's easy to say all this stuff, you know, when you're in the midst of creating a life, a family, and so on. And this isn't something to dwell on in any kind of morbid way. But certainly the idea and practices that one does, you know, meditation, chanting, whatever it might be that suits one, the practice of engaging in that transformation, which happens, you know, on a moment-to-moment, more minute level, all adds up when we are approaching this for ourselves, and certainly when we live through it with either dear ones and close ones or our parents. And I remember when I told Ram Dass about my experience with my father passing at the end, he just said, that is such a great thing. You were able to do that with him, and actually both my parents being there. Everybody should be part of that process. And now, of course, I know that to be such an important aspect of my life. So this is a great talk, you know, from him. Invite not the future. Which is an interesting title for this as well. Just at this juncture, I want to thank everybody again. I just rattled off a whole bunch of things that we're doing at the beginning of my introduction here. I just thank everybody. We do get a lot of great support, and you know, we need you to continue too. So take a look at that Sharon Ram Dass thing that's going to come up, retreat. It'll be an online retreat, you know, from the live retreat in Maui. And I think you would enjoy that. So all love to everybody. And here, Ram Dass, here and now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Take a moment and check in on your social battery. If it's looking full, is that because you were less social during the winter? If it's on the low side, is it because you don't have enough boundaries when it comes to your social life? It can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. And if it is on the low side, how do you recharge your battery? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Speaking with a therapist on a regular basis is a great way to improve your communication skills, build stronger relationships, learn to resolve conflict, increase your self-esteem, develop healthy coping strategies, change negative emotions and thought patterns, and much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Plus, switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ramdas today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ramdas.
I've been visiting a family. The man is in his mid-50s. He has a brain tumor they operated on, but it was too deep. It was inoperable, so it's growing. And he was a brilliant, successful, world kind of successful player on the stage of life. And he lost his speech facility in the surgery. So that, interestingly enough, he can only say one word, which is the word yes, which is quite extraordinary. So he is in a wheelchair. His body's falling apart. He's pretty much paralyzed. His mind seems to be pretty clear most of the time, and all he can say is yes. Yes, 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 yes. The only word left. So we started dealing with this situation, and I was called in by he and his wife. And this had been going on for 8 months now. At some point along in the interview, I said to him, "Do you want to die?" And he said, "Yes, yes, 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 yes." See, nobody asked him that. There was no way he could say that. And I said, "Do you want to die now?" And he said, "Yes," but it was not the same yes, 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 yes. That was a while back. So then, more recently, it was not only yes, 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 but "Do you want to die now?" Yes, 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 yes. Now, the family is a very liberal family in which people have a right to their own individual choices about what to do with their own consciousness and their lives. But the predicament is that he was part of a family. And then the question comes, and they weren't ready for him to die. I mean, he was going to die naturally anyway, but they weren't ready for him to die. But he had been so successful in his world that to stop all that, he couldn't now be this new person who could only say yes and sitting in this chair. In other words, he'd rather die than give up his model. I mean, it's like the captain going down with a sinking ship. To hold on to the myth that captains go down with a sinking ship, he would get down. And so what his family recognized was this was his willfulness that wanted to die. And they wanted to honor this. And at the same moment, emotionally, they felt starved and hungry and that it hadn't finished yet. Can you hear the issue? So, finally, it was agreed that he wait a month because the daughter was going on a trip and she wanted, I mean, this was bizarre in one way, you know, that here's a person deciding whether he'll die and she says, "Well, I made my plans a long time ago to go on this trip and I'd really appreciate if you'd wait till I got back and I'd like you to promise me you'll wait till you get back." This was a very interesting dynamic to deal with about what is one's commitment to a family and how much can you make unilateral decisions, you know? Is it the individual overall, or is the web and the extended family part of where collective decision-making comes from, you know? It's a very interesting issue. And we all struggled with it together. And he decided to wait the month. And in the next conversation, I talked to him and I said, "Is it possible?" I said to him when he decided to wait the month, I said, "Now, could I suggest there are two ways you could look at this month, as waiting for the month to be over, or you could live life for the month, you know, and see what's in it now with just who you are, you know, kind of get some quality out of it, you know. And I don't think he was prepared to do that. And I think it's really hard to see somebody choosing to end their life for an ego reason that feels like they could do more, or that they could. And then the question, of course, is there any reason one ends his life other than an ego reason? I think that's an interesting question. See, I mean, when the lamas send out postcards saying, I'm leaving my body next Thursday, and you come for tea, and you come for tea, and they turn around three times, sit down, and leave their body. Is that suicide? Is it, you know, what is it? What? How do you, would you hear that one? And what I love about that conference that weekend was it's right in the middle of the culture having this incredible time about the ethics of longevity of life and death. It's the time of Dr. Kevorkian. It's the time of insurance issues. It's the time of new longevity research. It's the time of economic collapse of the Social Security and Medicare systems. It's an incredibly interesting moment for this dance. And part of the fear of future suffering has to do with the collapse of the social structures that you have counted on, or that you had subconsciously counted on. Something went on. And what, of course, interests me is, where can I stand in relation to all of this future possible suffering in a way that it is not debilitating, and it does not cloud my consciousness, and it doesn't catch my energy, and it doesn't detract from this moment? And in fact, it enriches this moment because it's part of this moment. And that's the interesting thing, whether you can take anticipated future suffering and turn it into something that enriches the present moment. One of the things I've been thinking about, which I think I will probably wait until next visit to talk about, in opening up the whole period of aging and looking at social roles within aging, and trying to find social roles that are harmonious with the deeper agenda of aging, not just make work. But it may well be that service to the sick and dying becomes the optimum role for older people. Because that's the closest thing I can do to becoming as conscious as I can be. And therefore, I am meeting more and more people now who say, I want to thank you for your aging and dying tapes, and I want you to know I work with the dying, or I work with my mother who's dying, and I just want to thank you because I'm looking at it so differently now, and it's so wonderful. It was interesting. I was down in Brazil a few weeks ago, this conference. There was one comment I made in my lecture, which I made just in passing because it wasn't really that right audience to say it, but it just came out. I said, it's interesting when you stop just doing narrow practices and realize that your karma is your dharma. And that line went into the consciousness of that group and flipped the way they saw their lives. And I would say 24 people came up to me in the next few days and said, you know that line, my karma is my dharma, it's been sitting with me and it's been changing the way I, you know. And what I see now is that for those of us that are going to want to approach future suffering with some degree of equanimity and some degree of mindfulness and some degree of open-heartedness, the earlier we start, the better. And the more we come into the presence of these phenomena so that we can work with them, even though they're not ours yet, the more we will have eaten what we have to eat, digested our reactivity to it, and be able to keep our heart open in hell. Because I was thinking about older people and younger people, because the usual myth in the culture is, well, older people are the elders and they should teach the young. But the young don't want to know what the old know. because the old don't know the latest thing that you can only get with, you know, so many mega gigs or gigabytes. God, I just moved into the world of gigabytes. Can't believe it. I feel like I'm from outer space. So that intergenerational business, I think it's nice, and I certainly want to encourage it, but I don't think it fits in a non-traditional society too easily. The idea that young people are just going to respect old people because they're old, that goes so counter to our culture, which respects youth and not age, that, I mean, why ask for trouble, you know? But old people taking care of older people, or old people taking care of each other, that seems very tasty to me. I mean, that's like a 12-stepper. It's like a it's a self-help program, you know. It's great. I think it's absolutely wonderful. And you get another old person, you can practice being dependent. You know, how abhorrent you can depend on each other. That would be fun. There are all kinds of wonderful games you can play. See, I know I'm on the edge of being able to turn aging into something really incredibly interesting. But in order to do that, we have to extricate ourselves from the cultural stuff that is so thick in our habit structures and the way our minds work. It is a real stinker to extricate yourself clearly enough to see how you've been had. It's just so deep in all of us. And because I value these altered states of consciousness so much, and I value the fact that I believe the mystery of death is a non-conceptual moment, and that dying is a little bit like a maha acid trip. It's a trip in which the structures start to break down and break down and break down, and you're more here than you ever were because the boundaries between you and other are dissolving, and you are other as well as here. But you're holding on to a model of yourself as a time-space entity. And that is exactly what you deal with when you guide somebody through an acid trip. The breaking down of their consciousness. And that's what the whole idea was of psychological death before physical death. Because the thing that is frightening is the psychological death. It's interesting. It really is interesting. And when you've separated those out and you've practiced with psychological death, and that's why the practices that get you to play with the edge, whether it's through devotion, where you sing yourself into or pray yourself into non-separateness, or that kind of melting of boundary through love, you love your way into the universe, or you mind your way in by jnana yoga, by using the mind to beat the mind, by like a koan that forces you beyond your thinking mind or something like that. Whatever those techniques are, the more you practice them, the more you are comfortable with that process of transformation. Tim, about 10 years ago, said an interesting thing. Somebody was asking him about his psychedelic journey. He says, "I die so hard each time." And it's interesting because I think he didn't die hard. He didn't really die hard. He was a diehard, but not dying hard. What I'm saying is that when you're 50 or 60 or 70 now in this culture, you are dealing with a future that has a high likelihood that it will face you with things which, because of your either past memories or past experience, you suspect may be so thick that they'll catch you. Like being caught in boredom, being caught in chronic illness or pain, continuous pain, being caught in the fear of dying, being caught in the fear of dependency, being caught in dependency, being caught in living alone when you want to live with others, or living with others when you wish you were living alone, or somehow caught, and that you won't have control. Loss of control. These fears control people's lives as they get beyond the middle of them and start to move in. And how we deal with them primarily is through denial. We don't think about them. We don't want to think about them. We keep ourselves distant from them. We even distance ourselves from aging people in the culture by, for their own good, setting up places for them there instead of here, you know? I mean, it's all fascinating to watch that whole thing. So the thing is, the business of what does it mean to fold the future into the present so you're fully in the present is to open to and embrace these and acknowledge this, that yes, this is possible, and it, and actually vicariously run it through if you can, until you can be fully present with it instead of try to be present in spite of it.
This podcast is brought to you by the Love Serve Remember Foundation and Ramdas.org. We appreciate you listening, and we appreciate all the support that you've given us. Please continue that support and donate at Ramdas.org. We can then continue to share what Ramdas has been sharing for all of these years. Thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Everybody has a social battery. Sometimes it's bursting with energy. Sometimes it's drained. What's the right amount of socializing for you? It can be really easy to spread yourself thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to improve your communication skills, learn to resolve conflict, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Ramdas today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/Ramdas.